Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
Welcome to FST, today's podcast, obviously previewing the Super Bowl. Joined by my friend and new colleague, Davis Maddox. So, Davis, thanks for joining me today. I'm excited to talk a little bit about the Super Bowl.
Yeah, very, very excited. Thanks for having me.
You know, as a corny radio host, I'm obligated to ask you how cold it is in Kansas City where you're at. I'm in Long Island, New York, and that is 3 degrees currently. So, where are you at?
So, I'm actually a little bit better than that just today. It's up to 9 degrees, but yesterday it was in the negatives and it was not very nice.
Yeah, you basically just stay inside. That everybody asks, well, what do you do? What do you do if you have to go outside? Well, you say a little prayer and you bundle up as much as possible and you run to wherever it is and try not to slip on the ice. So I know it's going to be warming up pretty soon. So good luck with that, and hopefully you thaw out pretty quickly. So. I was taking a look at some of the stuff that you put out on Twitter recently and some of the articles that you've written, and we'll dive into the Super Bowl, specifically the passing games and the passing defenses. But it occurred to me that you joined Sports Grid just a couple of weeks ago, right? Started writing at the beginning of January. You had Jeff Janis on a podcast, and you are the number one seeded Jeff Janis truther in the world that I'm aware of. Is that fairly accurate?
I mean, there are other people who might try and lay a claim, but I certainly think that having him on my podcast solidified me as the number one truther.
Easily. And you were the first one through that door. So that's number two. And as a result of that podcast, you got an indirect and vague Milwaukee local news shout-out referring to the podcast. So, I have really one question. Are you ready to retire? I mean, this is like an Elway moment. You could just go out on top.
I could. I think that I could realistically retire happy after all of that. Yeah. Like the number one thing I wanted to do when I started this podcast was to have Jeff Janis on. Like, I basically bothered him via Twitter DM for 4 months before we finally got the time arranged to do it.
Nice. I listened to it. It was really entertaining. It's you know, he's a unique guy for the NFL. He's not the only person like that, but small school, didn't have a lot of publicity. As you mentioned on that podcast, and I encourage everybody to listen to the Take Cast of Jeff Janis. It's episode 60, I believe. You can find it on rotoexperts.com and on Davis's timeline at DavisMatic on Twitter. It's unique in that he's this super freakishly athletic guy that went to a small school with not a lot of notoriety. And he still remains kind of a small town guy. It's ironic that the Packers also had Jordy Nelson, who sort of has that background as well, but he went to K-State. He had a little bit more publicity, but you know, Janis is a unique guy in that he's just kind of a regular small town guy.
Yeah. I mean, he mentioned on there, he was like, oh, you know, my cell service isn't that good. Cause he still lives in the same small town where he's from. Right. He still lives in a town of like 2,000 people in the middle of nowhere in Wisconsin.
Yeah. So, you know, he's still trying to make a comeback, and I listened to the podcast. It seems like he's going to make some efforts to try to get back in the NFL. The other new leagues coming out in the CFL don't particularly interest him, but he's got enough athleticism that you'd think he would find a place. He's certainly more athletic than guys that were on rosters at the end of this season.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I mean, if you compare him to some of the guys that are getting snaps for some of these bad NFL teams,
yeah.
I mean, he's like, you can't tell me he's not better than Marcel Aitman for right. The Raiders or whatever.
I was
like,
Seth Roberts, ironically, that we both picked the same team, so your point
right.
Is well made.
Yeah, and I actually hope that that during the interview, I hope that some of the fact that he still wants to play trickles back into some front offices somewhere. That would be the most ideal outcome to having him on the podcast.
Yeah. So the last thing I'll ask you about the Janis thing Obviously, they are familiar with him in Green Bay, but he threw just a tiny bit of shade at Rodgers, really just affirming your point that, you know, Aaron's body language isn't always the greatest, and he's a little bit of a negative reinforcement guy, not a positive reinforcement guy. And Janis seems to wish it was a different way. Do you think that hurts his chances? Do you think anybody cares that he said it? And would it be water under the bridge?
I think it would probably be water under the bridge, because it just kind of seems like he's that type of guy that you just expect when you talk to him, you're just going to hear what he actually thinks, and maybe he's not going to try and sugarcoat things, and maybe that's part of why they didn't renew his contract in the first place. But they didn't need bodies. They were horrible on punt returns and kick returns last year, and all of their wide receivers are old, and Randall Cobb's probably not coming back this year.
Yeah, agreed. There's still a long way to go for the Packers, as much as Aaron Rodgers is a key piece, and statistically he did not have a very good season. Completion percentage was like in the 20s of quarterbacks in the NFL this year. They do have a long way to go. I think there's a lot of pieces that team still needs. We'll see if Janis can get back into the mix, but I think you're right about Cobb and the others. So let's turn it over to the game. You know, this spread is settled in here at 2.5, -3 at some books, and we've seen the total come down slightly, but still living at a pretty healthy 56.5. So you've done a lot of write-ups on various portions of the game, and I like the way you did it, because that's the way sort of I like to do it, is just break it down piece by piece. It's, you know, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time kind of thing. You just take a look at each section of the game and try when you take a step back from it, you can theorize in ways that don't make sense. So I like breaking down one by one. Well, how's the passing offense is going to look? How's the passing defense is going to look? So that's what we'll focus on today. We'll start with the passing offenses. Now, Brady has obviously, while people, like the rumors of the Patriots' demise have been greatly exaggerated, obviously you live just a couple miles from the Chiefs Stadium, and the Patriots put up 94 offensive plays against the Chiefs, the most by any team in any game this season. So clearly they have the ability to move the ball through rushing and a ball control passing attack.
Definitely, yeah. They are very effective at running the ball, which is it's not something that most teams do effectively. Most teams run the ball in a way that overall hurts their ability to score points, but the Patriots are good at it, and probably the best thing is the Patriots are just so good on third downs.
Yeah, true. I know you took a look at Brady's next-gen passing stats. He's obviously really good behind the line of scrimmage. It speaks to how they use James White. Additionally, he's pretty good. The one thing that really stands out to me is that to the left side of the field, if you're the offense looking down, to the left side of the field and that 10 to 20-yard range, he's got a 143 passer rating, which is crazy. But that's also, if you just think back to the Chiefs game on its own, it's where like Edelman lives and where Gronk had some huge third down catches. That is Brady's sweet spot, that 15-yard out, just getting across the middle of the field and into that wide open space. It seems like they just always have somebody open there.
Yeah, and I don't know exactly how they do it, but it is. It's not even like those guys are just running good routes. They're wide open. They just scheme guys wide open to where Brady doesn't even have to be a good quarterback to place those throws. And if he's getting all of those free throws against the Rams, if they're not able to do that, like if they're not able to solve that problem, I think the Patriots cover easily. I don't think that is what is going to happen. I think the Rams, because they're so good at generating interior pressure, are going to force Brady out of his comfort zone.
I agree with you completely that is obviously the way that Brady has gotten rattled in the past. You think back to the Giants Super Bowls, and they did a really good job without blitzing of creating pressure. And I think that's a key too. The key is not to blitz him and find some interior pressure and move him out of the pocket. For me, and it's why, and we'll talk about prop bets later, for me, it's what leads me to believe that White and Edelman will be as big as they've ever been in this game in order to try to scheme around getting Brady, getting rid of the ball very quickly on quick, easy throws. It's something they normally do, but I think it'll be accentuated in this game because they may have issues blocking them up front. As good as their offensive line has been, Aaron Donald is Aaron Donald.
Well, and they are their tackles are better than their guards are. And the way that I'm thinking about this game is a guy like Patrick Mahomes, he would actually rather be pressured in the interior so that he can roll out and get space. But a guy like Brady, who's much less mobile, he would rather the pressure come from the outside so he can step up and make his throw. But the Rams are really good at just collapsing that pocket and forcing the quarterback to move. And Brady can't do that. At this stage in his career, he's not rolling out and making those, you know, those strong arm throws. So I actually think, in terms of like a pass rush matchup, this is about as bad as it could get for the Patriots.
Yeah, and when you think back to the Falcons game just 2 years ago, obviously the story that's told about that game is the massive comeback, the Falcons choking on a couple of play calls. That's really the story that's going to be told. But despite the fact that he won the MVP in that game and he put up big stats, he really didn't have a great game. And part of the reason for that was that Grady Jarrett was dominating him. He had three sacks. He was creating pressure, pick six for Brady. He made a couple of other bad throws, including the Edelman catch, which will go down in history as an amazing catch. Brady basically threw a pick on that play. So it was, again, interior pressure from Grady Jarrett that was throwing Brady off his game.
Yeah, and I mean, if that happens, combined with how good this Rams offense is, and if Brady's just under siege this whole game, and they're not able to run to offset that pressure, I can kind of see the Rams winning by like a lot, like just absolutely smashing in this game. I think that is like definitely in play.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll turn it over to Goff then. He actually had a higher overall passer rating. As you said, by the way, again, Davis's articles, you find him on Twitter at DavisMatic, but you can find his articles on rotoexperts.com. He's heading the NFL 365 coverage for us, so he'll be writing about football all year long. So Goff has a higher passer rating. He had more success throwing the ball downfield, which goes back to your point about how they make it easy for Brady to hit shorter to intermediate throws and don't have him pushing the ball down the field as much. But a lot of Goff success, as you mentioned here, and I think a lot of people assume this, which probably isn't entirely fair to Goff, is that Sean McVay really schemes a lot of the receivers open. He runs 11 personnel almost all the time, just one running back, one tight end, three wide. And he creates situations for Goff to have easier throws or to have guys wide open. But if we could try to be positive for a second, how good was Goff this season, say, compared to Brady?
I mean, I think honestly, probably just from like an arm talent standpoint, if I just have to have a quarterback just throwing passes to any random wide receiver, I'd actually probably rather have Goff. And I would also probably rather have the combination of McVay and Goff heading my offense than Brady and Belichick, because there were definitely some points this year where Belichick was calling bad games, or where Belichick and McDaniel were not calling good games, where their offensive game plan was suboptimal. I don't think that will be the case in this game. I think their game planner is going to be super pass heavy. I think it's going to be a big James White game, but definitely I don't think that Jared Goff is like a disqualifier for the Rams in this game in terms of being a quarterback and being able to make all of the throws.
What level of concern do you have? Well, there's two concerns for the Rams offense in my mind. One is that we really don't know what's up with Gurley. They're saying he's healthy, but for some reason, C.J. Anderson is out touching him. You would never, in any reasonable circumstance, say that, that's fine, because Gurley isn't playing well. He may not be as efficient, but there's obviously something wrong in my mind with Gurley, that you would have Anderson out snapping him or out touching him. That's one. And two is that it has been different since Cooper Kupp went out injured. It's been 8 weeks or so, 8 games or so, and we have seen a difference. So what's your level of concern there for Goff, or do you think they've been able to pick up the slack with Josh Reynolds and other guys?
No, I mean, Cooper Kupp missing is like, that's like a really big injury for the Rams, and I did not think it was going to be. I actually kind of thought that they were going to be okay with Josh Reynolds, but that is not proven to be the case. They've been a lot worse with Reynolds on the field versus Kupp. And I kind of think what they're going to do in the Super Bowl is I think that they're going to run a lot more 12 personnel. They're going to have both Higbee and Everett in there kind of for the first time this year. And I don't exactly know what that is going to look like, but I think that for that strategy to work, Todd Gurley actually has to play really well because he has to be a threat out of the backfield for that playing style to work for what the Rams want to do on offense. So I think a lot of this game is actually going to come down to Gurley.
Interesting. So I tend to agree that Gurley's going to be a huge factor. There's no way that they can go into this game with Gurley having a dud game and win it. I just can't imagine that happening. Now, for somehow that did happen against the Saints, but you know the Saints didn't play their best game. I would suspect the Patriots will play a better game than the Saints did. So breaking down the pass catchers, you obviously have this group of receivers for the Pats and Edelman, Gronk, White, and Hogan, and the Rams with Woods, Cooks, Reynolds, and Gurley with minor contributions from the two tight ends that you just mentioned. On the whole, though, you like the Rams. They're just a more efficient, more effective overall pass catching group, even without Cooper Kupp, correct?
I mean, yeah, Woods and Cooks are just better than Hogan and Edelman and Dorsett. And, I mean, like I put in the article, you know, the big question mark is, can Gronk get back in the time machine? This is likely to be his, like, last NFL game. Can he get back in the time machine and play like prime Gronk? And if he does, I think the edge goes to the Patriots. But I just haven't seen it. Even the super clutch catch that he made in the AFC Conference Championship game, if pretty much anyone was guarding him other than Eric Berry, I think that would have been an incompletion, and the Chiefs would have won that game.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. As much as you're a Chiefs fan, I just thought that it was really obvious that Berry was just nowhere near the player that he once was, and I thought there was some very makeable defensive plays that they missed on. You know, obviously the offsides penalty is the one thing that I'm going to think about from that game for a long period of time, because if Dee Ford is on sides, that game's over. But such is life.
Yeah, that's a struggle. The Dee Ford offside is the biggest regret from that game for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. So all right, we'll turn it over to. Well, let me ask you one question, though. The Pats are known to, obviously, they're very good, as you mentioned in one of the articles, about being game plan specific and scheming against their opponent, specifically situational football and specific schemes against their opponent, which boggles my mind that other coaches do not do this. They just run their offense and run their defense the way they want to run it in every game. That always seems odd to me because Belichick is so good at scheming against his opponent. So against the Chiefs, they did a good job of eliminating Tyreek Hill from any level of success. Who is the guy that they have to key on here? Is it Gurley in the pass game trying to stop the run, or is it them taking Cooks out so Cooks avoids any big plays? Like, they'll let Robert Woods eat all day because they know the Rams going methodically down the field isn't the way they really want to play. They want to have some quick strike plays.
Yeah, I think basically eliminating Cooks from being a deep threat is going to be huge for them in this game. I think that's probably the biggest thing. And then also, I think they are going to struggle with eliminating the jet motion, because that their defense is slow. Like, they're all good, but their edge rushers and their corners are all kind of slow. And so the Rams use this jet motion on like 40% of their plays. And that's like hard for a corner to track the whole game, especially if they're going to just throw. If Stephen Gilmore just has to cover one of Woods or Cooks for the whole game and track them across the formation, I honestly don't know how he's going to do it. Like, I think that's just such a hard job. And I think that's all a big edge for the Rams, just how much they actually move on offense.
Yeah, good point. On the offensive line side, I've been saying this for a few years, and it's been especially noticeable since Dante Scarnecchia, the Patriots offensive line coach, retired and then came out of retirement after Brady got beat up in the 2015 AFC Championship game, and they just went back to being dominant for the last three seasons. his value to this team and the manner in which Brady doesn't even get touched, no sacks so far this playoffs, is incredible. And this isn't littered with first-round draft picks. Their first-round draft pick is out for the year. He never played a snap this year in Isaiah Wynn. And here they are, and the guy doesn't even get touched.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, they're clearly they have some sort of secret sauce on offense, right? On offensive line, to just be able to get all of these guys in and to basically have no continuity issues at all. To just be basically ready to go right away. Like, I just think I don't know what the secret sauce is, but I think that's basically the biggest advantage the Patriots have that people don't talk about. Keeping your quarterback from being pressured is like the number one advantage in the NFL right now.
Yeah, and I've said it for years. It was his first hit with the Pats, and now again, the fact that Brady is able to sit back there, you talked about how they scheme guys open, and they allow Brady, the Pats offense is about Brady making easy throws. He makes easy throws most of the time, and he's doing it without getting pressured. It's going to lead to success. Any team that is able to duplicate that would have massive amounts of success offensively. It doesn't need to be Brady throwing for 5,500 yards. It's just an efficiency that other teams can't realize. So the interesting thing is that on the flip side, the Rams offensive line has been given a lot of credit. I read an article yesterday on 538 by Josh Hirschmeier, which was great, in determining what your success will be in running the ball, because a lot of people have saying that the Rams are great historically as an offensive line, and they are very good. He threw a little bit of cold water on them being the best run-blocking offensive line ever, but nonetheless, this is still a very good offensive line, so both quarterbacks could remain relatively clean throughout the game, yes?
Yeah, I mean, neither team is particularly good at rushing the passer. Neither the Rams nor the Patriots finished above average in adjusted sack rate or in quarterback hits. So I actually think that I kind of like the over in this game because I don't know if either defense is going to be able to make the other offense uncomfortable.
I tend to agree with that. It's a big number, but 30-27, when last year was 41-33, the defenses were terrible in the game last year. Actually, it was a somewhat unpopular opinion. I didn't think the Super Bowl last year was that great. It was exciting because it was close, but I didn't think it was that great because it resembled a Big 12 game to me to some extent. Both quarterbacks had such an easy time. Brady threw for 500 yards. I didn't love that, but this could mirror that in some ways if we're not seeing pressure again, which last year, you know, we're up in a 74 range. I could see this being a 30-27 game pretty easily.
Yeah, I think that could definitely happen in this game, especially if one of the two teams jumps out to a lead early and either the Rams or the Patriots just kind of abandon the run. I could definitely see this game just going way over.
Yeah. Cool. So defensive side of the ball, we've talked a whole bunch about the pass rush. You did mention Stephon Gilmore. What is your best guess? Because you've mentioned a couple of things here between the article and right here on the pod. What is your best guess as to what Gilmore is going to do? I can't see them locking him up on Edelman or something like that. I just don't see that being the case. But
best guess for Gilmore is that I think that he will be assigned to Woods. And they will use one of their other corners, whether it be J.C. Jackson or one of the McCourty brothers on Cooks. And then they have the safety over the top on Cooks. So they just throw Gilmore on an island versus Woods. And then they have two guys kind of paying attention to Cooks.
So it goes back to your point. Then that means it's got to be a girly day, like in a huge way. It would Gurley would just have to have Kareem Hunt-like success against the Patriots.
Yeah, Gurley has to do his best James White impression, I think, for the Rams offense to be at their full potential in this game.
Yeah. Agreed. So you mentioned in this article on the passing defenses, again found on rotoexperts.com, that Aqib Talib is really good this year. And conversely, Peters was as bad as you're gonna get.
Yeah, Peters was horrible, and the Patriots know that. The Patriots know that he commits a lot of defensive pass interferences. that he just, like, he's just not nearly as good as Talib is. And so I think they're going to try and get Dorsett against Talib as much as they can, because they would rather throw to Edelman and Hogan, and they're just going to try and really attack them that way.
And lastly, Nickell Robey Coleman's obviously been in the news because of the penalty non-call and some just ridiculous comments about Brady. I don't know why he would give them bulletin board material, because they live for it. But he actually had a really good season this year in covering people. Yes?
Yeah, he was really good, and the Patriots know that for sure. And that sucks for them, because Robey Coleman is going to be on Edelman, which, you know, if Robey Coleman has a really good game on Edelman, that's rough for the Patriots.
Yeah. Okay, so let's turn it over to prop bets. You like player prop bets. I love player prop bets. As far as game props are concerned, I'm seeing it's dropped slightly, but the first one I like out of the gate is, will there be a successful two-point conversion, plus 170 on mybookie.ag. I just feel like the rate at which teams are trying two-point conversions at this point, there was actually not one completed last year, but in the previous two Super Bowls there was. So I'm liking the chances for there to be a two-point conversion, a successful one.
Yeah, these two teams specifically, right? These are two teams who you would say, oh, yeah, I think we're very likely to see one in this game. I've actually already bet that one, so we are on we are on the same page.
Good, good. Now, other player props. We've talked about Edelman and White. White in particular, you just have to think that White is going to go over on receptions, on yardage. That seems like the one guy that I would want to lock in on.
Yeah, the James White overs, I have already bet, and the C.J. Anderson unders as well are some others that I bet.
Got it. C.J. Anderson under. So C.J. Anderson rushing yards, 41.5. Yeah, I would take that under for sure. James White, to give everybody a sense of what we're looking at with James White receiving yards, that's 52.5. In 97 against the Chargers. He went over again against the Chiefs. So I kind of like that. There were some interesting lines with the Patriots wide receivers on scoring touchdowns. Like, you can get Philip Dorsett at plus 200 on a touchdown. I can just see them spreading the ball around a little bit when it comes to the end zone. Dorsett had a touchdown a couple of weeks ago, so I kind of like that. Gronk at plus 180, Dorsett at plus 210. Those types of players, their shots, you know, they're a little bit of a long shot, but you can get enough value out of those that I feel comfortable betting those guys as opposed to putting it down on Edelman or White to score a touchdown.
Yeah, I think Gronk to score is probably just like he's going to score in this game. If he's really told, like, his teammates, like, yeah, this is the last time I'm playing, like, he's going to get, like, 15 targets in this game. They are ready to use Gronk.
Yeah, I'm with you. Why not go out like that? There's no reason to save him for anything. And by the way, he hasn't shied away from the retirement talk at all. I think this has been a long time coming, at least this season. I think we saw at the end of last season he had some talk about it and wavering back and forth. And I think it's clear that he's on his way out. It would surprise me, actually, if he came back. I'd bet that this is going to be his last game. So how about any other ones, prop bets that stand out to you as good value on the player prop bet or on game props?
Well, for a defensive or special teams touchdown to be scored, that's one that I kind of like, just because I think Edelman, good punt returner, CP, great kick returner, the Rams have a couple guys, and I think, you know, this game's going to have a ton of passing attempts. The more passing attempts there are, the more likely there is going to be a passing interception for a touchdown. That's one that I bet that I really like.
I kind of like that. Tons of props out there. I printed out an 80-page prop list the other day from all different kinds of books. You can find some of this stuff online, and certainly if you're in a state that allows you to gamble online, just fire up that FanDuel Sportsbook app or any other apps and you can get on there. So good stuff, Davis. I appreciate you jumping on with me today. Any last thoughts on the game? Do you have a score that you're going to call on this one?
Well, I have placed a bet on the Rams plus 3 points. I think that these teams are pretty close, and the Patriots, you know, mystique does fit into this line. So, I have the Rams side of the game.
Got it. All right. I had Pat's futures from the beginning of the playoffs, so I think I'm just going to.
You want the Patriots to win by two, right?
That would probably help everybody. Actually, for me, if the Patriots are going to win again, I want to be financially compensated. That was my strategy. You know what I mean?
I think that's like a good hedge. That's a good hedge against the evil empire. I endorse that strategy.
It's the only way I can survive. I went to school in Boston. I'm friends with hundreds of Patriots fans. And my social media
is
sickening at times. So I just need to be financially compensated if and when they win. I'm hoping for a good one. I don't want to see the blowout. I hope to see a better game than last year. I know people will say that I'm nuts, but I just want to see a little bit more defense. I fear I may not. So in that sense, I'll either be financially compensated or the Patriots will lose. So thanks again for coming on. And people can find you on Twitter at Davis Matic. The Take Cast, which you put out there. How often do you do the Take Cast? Like once a week?
Yeah, it's like once a week, man. More, I mean, honestly, a lot of my guests are just people that reach out to me and say, hey, I want to do this. So, you know, if we get three of those in a week, there'll be three episodes. So we, whatever. But yeah, at least once a week, sometimes more.
Cool. So again, at Davis Matic on Twitter, you'll find all his writing on rotoexperts.com and the Take Cast. I highly encourage you to listen to the Jeff Janis pod. So thanks again, Davis. We'll do this again soon. Maybe catch up after the Super Bowl during off season. You and I will do some draft stuff together. I'll be heading up some draft coverage for us. And we'll get it going again.
Yeah, appreciate it. Anytime.
All right, sounds good. I'm Mike Blewett. Find me on Twitter at Mike Blewett. Thanks for listening to the pod. For Davis Matic, I'm Mike Blewett, and we're out.